Ogalin died on the dawn of her 15th birthday. She died gripping the wrist of the young man Amobi, he of the roving eye and honey-sweet tongue. Ogalin died right inside her bedroom, surrounded by her family and the medicine man, Dibia Agu, who had fought valiantly to save her young life. Of the circumstances surrounding her death, there could be no doubt whatsoever. Ogali's strange sickness had long been the talk of the village. There was no question in anybody's mind about the nature of her ailment. On the first day she fell sick, almost 13 months gone, her family had detected all the signs of the supernatural attack by Insudo, the Night Hag Supreme. The angry scratch marks on her face inflicted by evil claws, the dark marks around her neck that resembled the indentations of strangling fingers, the raw bruises between her thighs, where the demon had sucked out her fertility blood, and the swollen black skin of her breasts, where the Insudo ghoul had squatted on her chest during the ghastly attack that finally stole her young life. In the space of a few moons, Ogali, once a robust and cheerful young teenager, blessed with abundant hair and healthy body fat, was no more than a wasted bundle of bones, with hollowed cheeks and protruding ribs. Dibia Agu, the medicine man, covered her body with charmed amulets and sacred Insibaidi tattoos, which he hoped would chase away the malevolent nocturnal witch. An unwholesome stench pervaded her tiny sick room, a foul smell that reeked of decay. Coupled with the pungent potions brewed by the medicine man to shield Ogali's soul from the evil eye of the deadly night ghoul. All to no avail. The Insudo hag won the spiritual warfare in the end. By the time the full moon finished riding the high skies on that terrible dawn, Ogali's withered body had fought its last battle, yielding feebly to the paralytic weight of the rotund, invisible hag squatted on her bony chest. Her pitiful corpse rapidly took on the ashy hue of eternal death. The final proof of Insudo's mischief was evidenced in Ogali's eyes. For the 3 weeks preceding her death, her eyes had remained shut in the comatose sleep induced by that vile witch's attack. No amount of chanting or wails induced wakefulness in her. Yet, at the very instant of her death, Ogali's lids flew open, her dark eyes staring sightlessly into the white ceiling of the stuffy death room with a look of unholy glee. Everyone who witnessed those blazing dark pupils in the immediate aftermath of Ogali's death shuddered with horror at the malice glowing in their dead orbs. It was a look totally alien to the nature of the young girl, who in her lifetime had been of a kind and cheerful disposition. The cold malignancy in Ogali's dead eyes would have found its natural abode in the face of her killer, Insudo, the Night Hag Supreme, she of the thousand corpse body weight, and the witch matriarch of the Underworld Coven. As was the custom when a person died the ensudo death, Ogali's family immediately started the ritual of soul release, aimed at freeing her trapped soul from the curse of the Night Hag. This ritual was vital to ensure Ogali didn't join the ensudo family of blood witches, bloated, pale-faced hags bred in the deepest underworld. Without the ritual of soul release, Ogali would reincarnate into the clan, cursed with a short lifespan and destined to die in childbirth during each renewed cycle of her doomed reincarnations. Dibia Agu prepared Ogali's body with special burial charms to free her soul from Nsudo's curse. Everything was going without a hitch until the men went into the death room to bring Ogali's corpse outside for the final ritual of soul release by the medicine man. As the first of the men stepped into Ogali's room, a terrible scream issued from his lips. His companions, fast on his heels, equally screeched their horror at the sight they beheld inside the gloomy death room. On the floor, stretched out next to Ogali's corpse, was the young man, Amobi, he of the roving eyes and honey-sweet tongue. Amobi was in a deep slumber, his right wrist gripped tightly by the dead girl's hand, as if she were pulling him into the death realm with her. Save for the foolish grin on his face and the steady rise and fall of his exposed chest, the gathered men would have assumed him as dead as Ogali. The young men shouted out his name, their voices loud with panic and anger. But Amobi remained immobile, like one drugged from palm wine overdose. The commotion brought other family members into the hut, all gawped in disbelief, stunned by the sight they beheld. Then they started raging over the desecration of their dead, the fact that Amobi had dragged down Ogali's corpse from her narrow single bed onto the cold floor of the death room. Yet, none dared touch the strange pair lying side by side on the cement floor until Dibia Agu pushed his way through the crowd and connected his foot with Amobi's head, followed by a second vicious attack to his exposed stomach. Amobi, son of Obioha of Okoro clan, lift your shameless bottom from the floor and explain yourself to us before I curse you with the itchy pus penis and eternal sterility, you disgraceful scoundrel, shrieked the medicine man, fury reddening his eyes. His rage fueled the anger of Ogali's family, who all descended on Amobi, heaping invectives and painful blows on his person until he finally gained groggy consciousness. As Amobi made to scramble from the floor, he felt his arm jerk as Ogali's hand dragged him down again next to her corpse. He turned startled, sleep-reddened eyes to his hand, and the sheepish look on his face quickly morphed into horror. Amobi screamed, beating frantically at the cold claws clasping his wrist, his shrieks as manic as his frenzied actions.
"What's the matter with the man, huh?"
sneered Dibia Agu.
"Just look at the fool. So drunk he can't even get to his feet. Shut up and get up, you idiot. Stop that stupid ruckus, or I'll break your empty head for you," he spat.
Stooping low, to haul Amobi up by his left arm, the arm free of Ogilvy's hold. Amobi scrambled to his knees, still tugging his imprisoned right hand, his shrieks now reduced to feeble whimpers. He raised desperate, terror-bulged eyes to the medicine man. With a mumbled curse, Dibia Agu reached down and began prizing Ogilvy's bony fingers from Amobi's wrist. His touch was gentle, as he feared he might break the dead girl's fragile skeletal fingers. Ogilvy's fingers resisted Dibia Agu's touch. They remained firm on Amobi's wrist. The medicine man frowned and applied greater pressure, using both his hands this time. But it was as if Ogilvy's fingers were molded right into Amobi's flesh, reaching deep into his bone.
"What is this?"
Dibia Agu mumbled, giving Amobi a withering look.
"What is the meaning of this, huh?"
He turned to the crowd gathered inside the room, watching his actions with intense concentration.
"Boniface and Paulinus, come here and help me," he commanded, using his chin to motion two brawny young men over.
Boniface and Paulinus were barrel-chested twin brothers, known in the village as incorrigible fighters and troublemakers. The medicine man turned back to Amobi, his eyes narrowing with suspicion.
"By the way, how on earth did you get yourself into this mess, huh? Why in your drunken stupidity did you decide to invade this poor girl's death room to link your wrist to her hand? I hope lightning fries your flesh to cinders before this night ends. And don't think for one minute that you've heard the last of this. I'll personally ensure that you're fined heavily for this gross disrespect to the dead. And believe me, I'll make sure the fine is hefty enough to dent your father's wealthy purse,"
he hissed, glaring at Amobi with enough venom to slay an entire coven of witches.
"I didn't do it, I swear I didn't,"
Amobi stuttered, shaking his head violently.
"I swear on the souls of my ancestors that I didn't link my wrist to this woman's hand. How could I? I was asleep in my own bed, right inside my bedroom. I woke up and found myself here, just as you found me.
Next thing you'll be telling us you're not drunk and that this dead child carried you from your bed into this room.
Ha!"
Dibia Agu cut him off, his laugh devoid of mirth.
"But I'm not drunk, I'm not. Smell my breath if you like. I haven't touched any alcohol since..."
Amobi paused and looked around with a bewildered expression.
"What is the time?" he asked.
"And he says he's not drunk, huh? Ha!"
This time, the medicine man's laugh was tinged with mirth, the malicious kind, laced with sarcasm.
"What time do you think it is, then?"
he asked Amobi, turning to Boniface and Paulinus.
"What's keeping you two, huh? Can't you free this fool, or must we cut off his hand?"
Amobi gasped, his mouth widening in horror. He started tugging frantically, trying to pull himself away from Ogilvy's corpse. But it was as if he was bound to a tree with tight ropes. The corpse kept him rooted to the floor.
"Master Dibia, we can't release his hand," Boniface called out, his voice hushed in awe.
"Yes, come and see for yourself," Paulinus carried on from where his brother left off, as was the norm with the twins. Orly's fingers are like metal claws on his wrists, and we can't prize them apart.
Amobi shrieked once again, staring at the twins with horror-widened eyes.
What now? Dibia Agu glared at him.
Amobi pointed a trembling finger at Ogali's corpse.
Ogali? Did you just say Ogali?
Amobi's voice was a hoarse whisper.
Is this Ogali here, dead on this floor?
He stared at the corpse as one would a strange insect with human head and fish tail.
But it can't be Ogali. This is an old woman, not a young girl. What is happening here? Let me go! Get me out of here!
Amobi started to shriek anew, hysteria contorting his lean features.
Shut up, you idiot! Shut up before I take a machete to your neck and silence you forever!
Ogali's father lunged toward him. Dibia Agu quickly intervened, holding him back.
Get a grip on yourself, my man, Dibia Agu said before returning his attention to Amobi. As for you, stop being a wimpy woman. Just keep still so we can finish up here and conclude our business before the crack of dawn.
The medicine man barely concealed his contempt.
What do you mean by the crack of dawn? Amobi screeched. I returned to my home after dawn today. So how then can we have two dawns in one day?
If you doubt me, ask Ngazi from Ibe clan. We were both engaged in the pleasures of the groin at the time you say Ogali died. I swear I went straight home after our tryst and fell straight to sleep on my own bed until I woke up here.
Amobi shuddered as he stared at the emaciated corpse of the young girl, whose cold, dead fingers gripped his wrist with steely strength.
Several people in the room sniggered, and Dibia Agu couldn't hide the grim smile on his face.
And you say you're not drunk, huh?
He sneered.
Let this be a lesson to you on the evils of excessive palm wine.
Dibia Agu quickly joined the twin brothers on the floor in a renewed attempt to prize Ogali's fingers from Amobi's wrist.
And for your information, it's now way past midnight, the medicine man continued. Thanks to you, we have to sacrifice even more chickens to keep the spirits at bay. But for your stupidity, we would have been done with the ritual of soul release by now and getting ready to bury this poor girl. And don't even think for a second that we'll bear the cost of the extra chickens. Do you hear me?
Ogali's father pointed an angry finger at Amobi.
You'll be responsible for everything, including the food the mourners will eat. Do you hear?
He shouted. Ogali had been his only daughter, and her death had brought the sudden gray color to his head.
Master Dibia, what should we do now? Boniface asked.
Yes, what should we do next? Paulinus added. She's not letting him go.
This is a very strange business indeed.
Dibia Agu turned to look at Amobi, his eyes oozing menace.
Tell me, young man, how again did you get here? And why did you come here of all places?
I told you I don't know,
Amobi wailed, leaning away from the threat in the medicine man's eyes.
All I remember is sleeping on my bed and then waking up here. Some wicked enemy must have abducted me and brought me to this room.
Why would an enemy do that to you? And most importantly, why isn't this dead girl letting you go? My belief is that your hands are not clean, and you owe Ogily Ofornogo a debt to karma. Now, I want you to look me in the eyes and confess your crime. Otherwise, no power on earth can free you from her hold.
Confess! Confess!
The gathered crowd erupted in angry chants. I need to piss! Amobi grabbed Dibia Agu's arm with desperation. Please! I must piss before I shame myself in front of everyone!
You should have thought of that before you put yourself in this shameful mess, the medicine man sneered before turning to the crowd. Enough! He shouted, shaking his metal staff. He says he needs to piss, and he sure can't do it in here. We'll carry Ogily outside into the center of the hamlet so this fool can do his business in the soil. After that, we'll all bear witness to what he has to say. He must confess his secrets tonight, whether he likes it or not.
He turned to the brawny twins.
Carry Ogily into the compound, he instructed.
The twins bent to lift Ogily. They stumbled and almost fell to the floor. A bewildered expression painted their faces. With a deep grunt, they leaned low once again and attempted to lift the corpse. Soon, the small room was filled with a raspy sound of their heavy breathing. A sudden silence descended upon the watching crowd, the air pulsating with fearful tension.
Master Dibia, the body will not move, Paulinus gasped, his eyes wide with terror. Ogily will not allow us to move her body,
Boniface whispered, as if afraid the dead girl might hear his voice and punish him. Dibia Agu turned to look at Amobi with eyes of flint.
And you say you've nothing to confess, huh?
He said testily.
This is all the proof we require. When a corpse that's little more than a skeleton assumes the weight of 10 elephants, then we know there's some unfinished business afoot and a grave injustice unavenged.
As he spoke, he knelt by the corpse and began to whisper words into her right ear. Everybody watched with bated breaths as the medicine man spoke to Ogali's corpse. Were their eyes deceiving them, or did the corpse appear to shudder? The lids on those tightly closed eyes flicker. Even the hardy twins scrambled away from Ogily's corpse, watching Dibia Agu from a safe distance with the rest of the crowd. For several minutes, the medicine man remained with his face pressed to Ogily's ear. And when he finally stumbled to his feet, his face appeared to have aged by several years, the lines deeper, his eyes haunted.
Try again,
he instructed the twins, his voice weary.
I think she'll cooperate now.
The twins looked at each other, fear dousing their faces in sweat. They would have bolted from the room save for their pride and their determination to protect their fearsome reputation amongst the villagers. They inched close to the corpse and once again tried to lift it, their muscles primed for the dead weight. But this time, Ogily's corpse flew off the ground like a feather. The spectators gasped, stunned by the miracle. As the twins walked out of the room bearing the corpse, Amobi trailed beside them, his wrists still imprisoned in Ogali's hand. It was clear that whatever deal Dibya Agu had struck with Ogali's corpse didn't include Amobi's release. Outside, more villagers had gathered, alerted of the unusual events taking place in Ogali's hamlet by the invisible grapevine. As they saw Amobi, his wrist gripped tightly by the dead girl's hand, they gasped and crossed themselves, shouting out several, "Jesus! Amadioha!" in consternation. They cursed and jeered loudly at Amobi as he urinated into the soil from his kneeling position beside Ogali's outstretched corpse.
"What's going on here?"
A raspy voice pierced through the din.
"Amobi, what are you doing here?"
"Papa!" Amobi's voice was a wail of relief. "Papa, help me!" He began to tug against his dead captor frantically, struggling to stand up. Again, Ogali's corpse pulled him down, pinning him to the dusty ground.
"Obioha of Okoro Clan," Dibya Agu called out. "It's a good thing you're here to witness your son's shameful atrocity and hopefully convince him to come clean so this poor girl's soul can finally rest in peace. And you'd better dig into your abundant pocket for the money to cover the cost of the extra sacrifices which your son's vile actions have inflicted on us," Ogali's father shouted, shaking his fist furiously at Amobi. Other family members added their robust support, with more blistering invectives heaped on Amobi's head.
"Amobi, stand up immediately and explain yourself to me," his father commanded, striding over to grasp his son's arm.
A hacking cough hampered his progress, his frail body seeming incapable of remaining upright. His attempt to haul his son from the ground ended with him toppling down next to Amobi. The angry look on his face gave way to astonishment and confusion.
"Papa, that's what I was trying to tell you," Amobi cried, tears pooling in his eyes. "I swear, I didn't do anything. I went to bed yesterday, and woke up with Ogali's hand gripping my wrist. She'll not let me go. And now they're saying I'm guilty, that I must have done something to her, which is why her spirit seeks revenge. And shut up and let me think," his father cut him off, stumbling to his feet.
A group of mud-coated young men pushed their way through the crowd. They announced they had finished digging Ogali's grave. On hearing them, Dibya Agu turned to Amobi's father with a frown.
"Obioha of Okoro Clan, you see what your son has done," he said. "By this time, we should have completed the ritual of soul release and buried Ogali. Now, because of your son's actions, we're stuck for another day and must await the rise of the next moon to start the ritual."
Dibya Agu spat angrily into the soil and took Amobi's father by the arm, leading him away for a private chat.
"Papa, where are you going?"
Amobi cried in a petulant shriek.
"Hurry up and set me free. She's starting to smell, and I can scarcely breathe for the stench."
"Idiot boy, it's your cowardly piss that's stinking you out,"
Dibya Agu cursed.
"Stop your pathetic whining and take your punishment like a man."
Dibya Agu returned his attentions to Amobi's father.
"Obioha of Okoro Clan, You and I have known each other for a long time. I treated your sickness for many months before you decided to consult a different medicine man and rid yourself of my services. But I bear you no grudges and can only pray that this strange curse, which continues to eat up your body weight like a blood-soaking mosquito, will soon give you respite.
Dibya Agu's eyes did a rapid scan of Amobi's father, whose billowing caftan failed to hide his emaciated body and sunken sockets. He was struck by the similarities between the man's wasted look and Ogali's withered corpse. Dibya Agu would have considered him a victim of the same supernatural and pseudo-attack, save for the fact that the night hag only attacked women, and rarely men. In fact, the Ensudo attack on a man was a clear sign of an unfortunate reincarnation, one in which a female ancestor returned in the body of a man. Those poor men usually ended up exhibiting female mannerisms and even courting other men in secret, just as a man would court a woman. Dibya Agu shuddered, feeling the overpowered presence of death hovering close to Amobi's father.
Obioha of Okoro clan, I'll speak in plain tones to you. The dead girl, Ogali, is an angry spirit. She bears a grudge against your son, which only he can explain. It's her spirit that glamored your son and brought him to her death room, where she imprisoned him. She'll not let him go until he confesses. And I don't intend to delay her burial for another day. As your son rightly said, her body is already starting to rot in this sweltering heat, and the reek of dead flesh now taints the air. So, I want you to inform your son that we intend to cut off his arm and bury it with Ogali's corpse, since that's the only way to free him from her hold and send her to the grave soil.
Amobi's father gasped. He stared at Dibya Agu with horrified eyes.
You must not do that to my son, he begged, clutching the medicine man's arm with trembling hands. Please, find another way to resolve this problem and free my son. Amobi is my sole heir. On him rests the perpetuity of our bloodline. I'm not long for this world, as you can see, and death shadows my every step. My son is innocent of any crime. I swear that on my ancestors' souls. Yes, Amobi enjoys the sweet nectar of women, just like his father, my worthless self. But that doesn't make him a bad boy, just a foolish one. Please, great Dibya, for our old friendship, use all your powers to free my son from this evil. Mention your price, any amount, and I'll pay without a quibble.
Tears streamed down his cheeks as he spoke, and he did little to save his pride. Dibya Agu looked at him with pity and shook his head.
Old friend, this is not something that your money can fix. I can't desecrate Ogali's corpse by severing her hand to free your son. It will ruin her reincarnation. And even so, there's no guarantee that your son won't walk the rest of his life with her dead hand around his wrist. I tell you, no power on earth can prise those fingers off Amobi's hand. With everything I've witnessed today,
I won't be surprised if her corpse refuses to stay down in the soil and continues to seek him out in vengeance. Ogilly's hand is the sign of a grave wrong that must be avenged. Your son is the only person apart from her who can tell us why she rages from beyond. Speak to him. Prod his memory. As you say, he's a foolish young man with an eye for the girls. Who knows how he might have offended her or trifled with her affections?
Dibia Agu patted his shoulder kindly and turned to leave. A sudden commotion brought him to a halt. He turned around and saw a scene of chaos and terror. People were screaming, fleeing from Ogilly's corpse. Others inched closer to feed their morbid curiosity. And when his gaze settled on the corpse, Dibia Agu gasped and stumbled back, his body breaking out in goosebumps. Cold claws crawled up his spine. In a lifetime of an illustrious occultic career, he had encountered enough strange and terrifying sights to harden him against shock. But what he now saw on the dusty ground froze his heart like nothing else had ever done. People who were nearest to the scene would later claim they saw Ogilly's corpse turn itself over as a sleeping human would, until she faced Amobi in a deadly combat. Others testified that it was Amobi who turned her over when he tried once again to escape her hold. But regardless of how the corpse turned, one thing was water clear to everyone, a horrifying vision that sent them fleeing from the scene. Ogilly's hands were wound around Amobi's neck, choking the life out of the screaming youth. Amobi thrashed his arms and legs, fighting a lonely and desperate battle for survival. His father screamed and ran towards him, falling to his knees, clawing at the bony fingers that were slowly choking the life out of his only son. Somehow, he succeeded in unclasping one hand, but seemed incapable of letting go of the hand himself. The onlookers noticed with horror-goggled eyes that both father and son were now prisoners of the dead girl.
I confess, Ogilly, I confess,
Obioha of Okura clan cried, his voice hoarse, quivering.
I stole your life and sent you to your early grave. I confess my evil. Please, let my son go. You have me now. Do with me as you wish, but spare Amobi's innocent life. I'm begging you. Mercy. Forgive.
His bony frame trembled like wind-tossed leaves, tears choking his speech. The crowd gasped, gawping at Obioha as if he'd morphed into a ten-headed monster.
Obioha of Okuro clan, what is this you say? What possible hand can you have in my daughter's untimely demise?
Ogilly's father looked stunned, his eyes glazed with confusion. Everyone knew his daughter had died of the Ensudo spell, coupled now with an unknown evil committed by that trapped lad, Amobi. Dibia Agu yanked Obioha by the neck of his caftan, trying to drag him away from Ogilly's corpse. But just as she did with his son, Ogilly's grip kept Obioha trapped on the ground.
What have you done, Obioha of Okoro clan? What evil have you released into our midst and your bloodline.
Dibia Agu's voice was like thunder. Obi-Oha reached out his free hand, clutching the medicine man's ankle, sobbing and coughing so hard it seemed he would spill the contents of his stomach.
It was the witch doctor from Okuro Village who told me to do it,
he cried in a tremulous voice.
He said I'll die unless I pass my curbs to a virgin. I'd been to every hospital in the big city. The doctors there said I had a strange disease they called AIDS. They said there was no cure, that I'll die a slow, torturous death. You know I have many young children, and my only son, Amobi, is still a youth scarcely out of his teenage years. Who will I leave my family to if I die? Good Dibia, I came to you for help, didn't I? But you couldn't heal my sickness, remember?
Obi-Oha lifted pleading eyes to the medicine man, seeking his understanding.
I did what the Okuro witch doctor told me to do. I had no choice, no alternative. It was either that or die in my prime. I caught Ogali on her way to the stream and mounted her by force. She fought me. She fought hard for her honor. My strength was greater, and I had my way. I knew she wouldn't tell on me, as that would cost her good name and the chance of a good marriage. But I didn't know she would die so quickly, so soon. The witch doctor lied to me. He said I could pass my sickness to a virgin whose pure blood would cure me. Ogali was a virgin, but she didn't cure my curse. Nothing can cure my curse. I know that truth now and regret what I did. But my son is innocent. Amobi had no hand in anything. Nothing. Help me save my son, Great Dibia. Help him, please.
Even before he finished speaking, the crowd descended on Obi-Oha of Okuro clan, led by Ogali's grieving father. They tore into him, limb by limb, using their fists, their feet, sticks, stones, and every implement they could find to end his accursed life. It was a mad orgy of blind violence, and Dibia Agu could only stare in fatalistic resignation as Obi-Oha bled into the soil in a blood sacrifice of atonement. In the furor, no one noticed when Ogali's hand let go of his hand, but Obi-Oha's death failed to buy his son's life. Amobi gasped his last just as his father's body stilled in death next to him. Ogali's fingers were still closed around his neck. When Dibia Agu came to separate the two young corpses, they yielded to his touch with malleable ease. Ogali's fingers were like soft clay as the medicine man prized them gently from Amobi's neck, a neck that bore the dark marks of her mortal vengeance on his bloodline. After Ogali was finally laid to rest, Her family erected a white gravestone over her grave. A city sculptor was commissioned to mold a symbol of a clenched hand onto her gravestone. The fist was cast in gleaming black plaster, the fingers long and strong. It rose from Ogilly's gravestone, straight and proud, as if daring the very skies and the gods to judge her. People who passed by her grave shivered and crossed themselves, bowing low with respect and awe. Today, young maidens visit Ogilly's grave to clasp her stony fist for comfort when their hearts are cut by the cruelty of men. And when they curse those callous lovers in Ogilly's name, the men fear and quake. For they know that a curse in Ogilly's name is a curse to be feared. They know that Ogilly's hand is the cold hand of justice.